Are you ready to ignite your business and achieve your full potential? Welcome to Building Success Stories, the podcast that empowers entrepreneurs and business leaders. I'm Ann Donnelly, and I've spent over four decades in the business world. I've witnessed the power of perseverance, innovation, and strategic thinking firsthand. We'll explore the stories of successful entrepreneurs and business leaders, and we'll delve into the practical strategies and mindset shifts that can propel your business to new heights. Get ready to be inspired and motivated to take your business to the next level. In this episode of Building Success Stories, I speak with Paula Traina, a dedicated State Farm agent with offices in Queensbury and Glens Falls, New York. She's built a thriving business rooted in community involvement and a passion for helping others. With a strong foundation in the insurance industry and a commitment to personal and professional growth, Traina has positioned herself as a trusted advisor and a valuable asset to the community. And just recently, it was announced that Traina was awarded the Rising Tide Award by the Adirondack Regional Chamber of Commerce's Women's Business Council for her contributions to that group and the chamber overall. So I'm here with Paula Traina, State Farm agent, who has two offices in this area in Queensbury and Glens Falls.
Yes.
I understand that's fairly significant having two.
It is. It's not that common. State Farm generally likes to have one agent in a local neighborhood, so to speak, and they've always stuck with that model for many years. But probably about maybe 5 or 6 years ago, they started letting some agents open a second office.
Great. So you took over an existing office.
I did. I took over the second office. I took over when Dick Saunders passed away after a very long and healthy career with State Farm, 65 years.
So just keep it going in Glens Falls.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. So how you got started? So out of college, you were working with the Social Security Administration mm-hmm. for a little bit, and then you started at State Farm. So what made you interested in starting up with State Farm? You worked in the corporate kind of offices first.
I did. So right out of college, I started at the Social Security Administration, which is how I really landed in this area. And that was over on Cronin Road at the time. And I liked it. It was a great job. But I could tell it wasn't really for me. Mm-hmm. I really liked to be able to control my own career a little bit more than you can with a government position. Mm-hmm. So after a couple of years, I started looking elsewhere, and I had a friend that worked at State Farm, and she introduced me to the company. And I began in the Boston Spa Operations Center in the claims department and was there for 14 years. So I started out handling claims. I sort of circled my way around to many different departments. Mm-hmm. The company in and of itself is a promote from within company. So I had a lot of opportunity to learn different jobs in different departments. And they provided a lot of continuing education within the insurance field, as well as I was able to complete my MBA with myself. So I went, I did a lot of different jobs there.
Mm-hmm. So you got to know State Farm like very well from all the different angles.
From all the different angles. I was mostly in claims and the claims side of it. So the major departments of the company would be claims and underwriting and then agency. And then, of course, there's a lot of support departments around that. But so I'm very familiar with the claims area. And the last few years, I had the opportunity to work with the corporate learning and development area. So that exposed me to really the broader company as a whole. And I did a lot of traveling with that job. It was amazing. So much opportunity. I met so many wonderful people, but I was on the road.
Mm-hmm. So and when you're starting a family, that's not ideal.
Yeah, it was not.
So is that part of the rationale with then starting your own agency?
It was. I did. I managed in the learning and development training world for a little bit over 3 years, and I was all over the country. helping roll out different initiatives and training employees to learn those initiatives. And it just became from a family perspective. So I started to explore opportunities and see what I could do that would keep me home. And they actually approached me and asked if I was interested in pursuing this. The first office, which is in Queensbury, they were opening or planning to put a brand new agent here. And I had expressed interest years prior, but wasn't really ready to commit. And so they approached me on that. And I said, it was a good time.
That's a great example of something that you were thinking about, but recognized that you weren't at that stage. But then in time, it came around to me.
Yeah, I actually started down the agency career path with State Farm two times before I actually took it. So three total. And each time it was just not previous. It just wasn't the right time, either for my family or financially for us to, you know, navigate that. And then, you know, timing is everything. So
because when you're an agent and you have your own agency, that's like being self-employed. Is that
100%? Yeah, definitely. So I have a 1099 contract with State Farm, and I have an S Corp that all my employees work. Mm-hmm. So my S Corp contracts with State Farm.
Yeah. So you get tons of support from State Farm, but you're pretty much running this business.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So it's a good balance because I do have all that back office support of a Fortune 50 company, the training platforms, the tech support, the marketing support, but it's entirely my own business, and I can run it the way that I see fit.
Yeah.
As long as I'm in compliance with their corporate provisions.
Mm-hmm. So how did you find that when you were first starting out? Because that's a big change.
It was a huge change in the beginning because I really was raised professionally in that corporate structure where I had a large peer group, where I had a lot of daily interaction with people doing either the same job as me or very similar jobs. And so you had a lot of people to bounce ideas off of. I had leaders above me, below me, you know, it was lots of people to talk to and collaborate with. And particularly the training leadership role that I had was a very collaborative position. And it was a startup department that I was building. And that was a huge transition because when I came here, it's like a little silo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a little competitive piece. So not every agent wants to share the details of their business plan and their strategy with other agents. So there's always that, you know, piece to it. So you're really on your own. But since that time, I've learned to develop my network of friends, peers, collaborators in both within the State Farm and outside business.
That's why I find it's helpful to be involved in the chambers because they're all about collaboration and networking and working with other people. So as a solo operator, it's really helpful for me.
Absolutely. I got involved with the chamber right away. I think I joined before I even opened, and I went to my first event the first month, and I didn't know anybody. And
what year did you start?
December of 2018.
So I had met you like just before you were starting up too. I met you at a Women in Business meet.
That's right. I started kind of dipping my toes in a little bit before. And so I jumped in because I knew that I was going to need that support and I wanted to get more involved in the community. And the previous 3 years when I was traveling with State Farm, I really wasn't that able to engage that because I wasn't here. And when I was, you know, tired, recovering, spending time with my family. So I was excited to jump into the community, and the chamber was a great way to do that.
And you've really embraced it because now you're on the board of the Adirondack Chamber.
I am.
You're quite active in there, sponsoring lots of events and programs and things.
Yeah, I love all the different people that I meet. And all the different industries and learning the different companies and different employers that this community supports is amazing.
So you grew this first agency fairly quickly, mm-hmm. right? Did you go from just being on your own and then, or did you have staff from the very beginning?
I did have staff from the very beginning, but we had zero customers. So that, in my world, that's considered a new market or scratch agency. And it, you know, presents its own set of challenges. Mm-hmm. But I did bring a team in right away. So I had, I started with a few people. Alex was one of them. So Alex Green is my office manager, and she's been with me since the very beginning. And we, the two of us, really helped raise this agency up and build our customer base. And I mean, to this day, we both know pretty much, if I can say somebody's name, we can have a conversation about their, you know, what their needs are, their family, without even looking at mm-hmm. their account. So it is a nice way to build it up yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The second office in Glens Falls, I took that over from Dick Saunders when he passed away. So I've had to really put a lot of time and energy into learning.
Get to know the people.
Mm-hmm.
And did, was there staff already there, or using the same staff?
No, unfortunately, Dick passed away and everybody else retired.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've been
time for a new regime.
Yeah, it was time for a new regime. So I continued to be building that location and building a more cohesive staff for that office.
Mm-hmm. Do you find there's different needs between the two offices, or is it very similar? I mean, we're so close location wise, but it is,
there are different needs for that office, because Dick was an agent within Glens Falls community for 65 years, I believe. So, you know, you have a tendency to work with people who are in your demographic. So his customer base was aging, where the one here is significantly younger. So the technology we employ in my Queensbury office was not readily translatable to the customers that are with the Glens Falls office.
So you found you had to kind of learn a bit about the new demographic and how to work with them.
Absolutely. But I quickly saw that was going to be, mm-hmm. you know, something that we were going to have to do. And I was able to pull from my time with the Social Security Administration. Mm-hmm. I've worked with that, you know, older population for, you know, years prior. So we just had to figure out how to do our end of the business in a way that they were comfortable doing okay. business. And we've been able to do that. So mm-hmm. we've sort of melded the two now.
Okay. So what sort of challenges did you think when you first started this up and grew this and taking on the other office, what were some of the challenges you faced and how'd you get over them?
I would say that probably the biggest challenge that I've faced is not having that professional support network of people to come alongside. So when I worked in the corporate environment, I always had a supervisor on top of me, even when I was in a management role. So they would be able to offer advice and guidance. And then I had HR professionals and accounting professionals who were just a phone call away. And I even had facilities professionals. So if there, you know, was a plumbing problem, I had somebody to call.
Yeah.
My first day in this office, we had a plumbing problem and there was nobody to call. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is difficult.
I'll send it to you.
So that was, you know, very eye-opening on day one. So I've had to build that network around, and I've had to learn skill sets that I didn't have before, because when I led internally, I had recruiters filling my interview schedule with, you know, with candidates that were qualified.
Yeah.
So I just had to show up for the interview that they scheduled for me. So now it's not just I'm running, you know, selling insurance. I'm also a talent recruiter. I'm a trainer. I'm an HR professional. I have to do, you know, I have to find, thankfully, I'm not skilled in the accounting world. So thankfully, I have been able to outsource that. But like, there's so many different things that I had to learn mm-hmm. that were I never had before.
Yeah. And well, that's an important stage in a business, is when you're starting to grow, understanding I can't do everything and deciding what to outsource. Mm-hmm. So like accounting is kind of a logical one. Were there other things that you found like I just need or have a staff member that can handle that? Or
I've come to outsource HR assistance because that is always changing from Annalisa the landscape. So I have, so now I, you know, I outsource that. I have recently outsourced with a fractional CFO, mm-hmm. which helps me have that professional who is skilled and knowledgeable in finance and the number part of running a business. Because even if I am collaborating with a friend or, you know, somebody similar, they don't look at my books and they don't look at my actual numbers and I don't look at theirs.
Yeah.
You're maybe talking about it, but I saw the need that I needed to have a professional that we could be looking at the same numbers.
Yeah.
And so at this point, I invested in that this year. So that was year six.
Yeah. Yeah. And good to have someone to discuss those things through mm-hmm. with.
Yeah. And we meet like once or twice a month mm-hmm. and really dig into, mm-hmm. you know, the finance end of things and where I need to make adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
I have found that that's been really beneficial mm-hmm. just from a strategic standpoint, but also from a mental health standpoint
yeah.
for me, you know, just to I can rest assured that I have bounced things off.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just like a logic check, you know, like, you know, yourself that this is a good way to go, but then it's good to have somebody to back that up, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So were there any other sorts of challenges?
So building a team has just, you know, constantly been a challenge. It's part of it is me learning the types of the skill set that's going to be really necessary, and then learning how to find it in the interview process has been a learning experience for me.
Is there much of a like a talent pool in the area? Are you finding?
So there is, but insurance is very technical. Right. So you have to have that technical piece, and the licensing requirements
mm-hmm.
can be heavy. And then you have to have the relationship building piece and the sales acumen. So finding people with all of those things is challenging. So I tend to, you know, find candidates with maybe two out of the three, and then we work on developing the third area. So that's how the strategy I've taken.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good though. You know, it's like, you got to find people with the right attitude too, which you probably have learned from your work in the training area at State Farm too.
I look for candidates that really share my core values, and that's the first and foremost what I'm looking for. And then secondly, I look at the skill set and
mm-hmm.
do I have things that we can build on? There. Mm-hmm. I don't find candidates that have the exact skill set that I need,
mm-hmm.
but I look for sort of the foundation and can we build from
it? Absolutely.
And with the right attitude,
mm-hmm.
we can really do a lot.
Mm-hmm. Now, in insurance, being an agent, having your own agency, it's very much about personal brand also, because it's your name.
Mm-hmm.
You're out there, they're representing you. How do you find that? Are you real comfortable with that?
If you would have asked me this 10 years ago, I would never,
mm-hmm.
I would say no, absolutely not. But I have embraced it and tried to build my brand on a professional level in the community.
You've done a great job of it, I may say so.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Brand is something that I guess I never really thought about it, but State Farm Corporate talked a lot about branding and the customer experience from the very beginning. So when I remember being in a training very early in my career, and they were talking about our competition, and they were not talking about other insurance companies. They were actually, this was early. So I'm going to say, I'm going to ballpark this at like maybe 2008, 2009, maybe. They were talking about other insurance companies being our competition. They were talking about like Amazon mm-hmm. and I think what the other companies were. Disney, like companies
that have big attention,
that have and a big service component.
Yeah. Okay.
Because when you're in any sort of service industry, you're providing the customer an experience. And so the experience I provide them is around risk management, insurance, financial services, and maybe Amazon's like, you know, providing them with products. But it's how we do it and how they feel and the environment that's created. And so when you have a company that's really, really raises the bar on a customer experience level, yeah. then it sort of raises it across all industries. Like,
yeah,
think about, I remember like being a teenager and getting catalogs for clothing in the mail, like going through and then ordering something and then it coming like 6 weeks later. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine ordering something yeah. today and it taking 6 weeks to come
yeah.
in the mail?
Yeah.
That would be crazy, because I would order something last night on Amazon and it's going to be on my doorstep today.
Yeah.
And so that's now the customer experience expectation. You know, you purchase something and you have it immediately available. So those sorts of, so that's something that I think hit home for me. And so, and that goes on a branding level too, right? You have to create this customer experience even before they're your customers. So I treat everybody like they're my customer.
Mm-hmm. Well, insurance is very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably one of the most competitive industries around, and people are often looking around, shopping around. There's so many. Like when you go to any of the chamber mixers, how many insurance agents or insurance agents, banks?
There's tons of it. The thing about insurance is that it's often commoditized, right? And people will often shop on price, but it is a lot more goes into it.
Yeah.
Because you can shop on price and you can always get a cheaper price on a product, but is that the right coverage? Is that the right protection for you? So I don't really sell on price. I talk to customers about finding the right coverage that's appropriate for them, the right plan to put in place that's really going to protect them. Because it doesn't matter what you're paying if you don't have the right thing in place when the day comes that you're going to need it, if it's not the right thing.
Yeah, yeah. And the service aspect.
You're there.
I was so impressed when just after the hurricane hit up here, you were like, I went out, you went to everybody that you
mm-hmm.
thought would be having possible claims.
Yeah. So when we had those tornado. Yeah, the yeah. tornado warnings, and there was a lot of homes in this area, a lot of damage. And, you know, I knew what the day was going to break, because having spent 14 years in claims, I spent a lot of time handling catastrophes and high volume claim situations. And so I was prepared. So thankfully earlier in my career, you know, had me ready for that. And we just came in, knew we weren't going to be doing anything but talk to people about their houses and their cars or whatever was damaged from the storm. And we called all of our customers, figured out who had serious damage, and we did that all in the afternoon. It was all hands on deck, and or all in the morning, and then in the afternoon I was just driving around, stopping, taking pictures, meeting with people, and offering assistance.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, that level of service that's going to set you apart from others.
Yeah, and it's pretty common with State Farm. I mean, that's our business model. We have agents have authority to settle claims and give customers checks when they've suffered a loss and they need money right away. We do have, and other companies don't do that. That is very rare in this industry. So it is definitely a competitive advantage.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
So what's the future of Paula Trina State Farm?
Well, I think 2025 is going to be a very exciting year for us. We are growing. We are adding to our team. And the market is shifting. And I expect it to be a really active year in both the community events and from a growth standpoint. Mm-hmm.
You sponsor a lot of events, like I mentioned, events and activities and things. Do you find that there's a good return on that business-wise? Or is it just something you do out of your own kind of passion for being involved in the community?
I can't give you a number, like a solid ROI on it, but I do believe it contributes significantly to the personal branding in the community, and it helps open conversations for me and brings referrals. But from a metric standpoint, I can't say that I'm getting, you know, that level. It's just how I like to engage and I like to meet people. Mm-hmm. And so we've made a conscious effort to support women in business and children's educational programming and sports programming and fire safety. So those are sort of the major initiatives and small business support. Mm-hmm. I do sponsor a lot of different events around the chamber. Most of, I think probably a good portion of it is with the Women's Business Council. And then
maybe that's why I see so much of it.
Oh, yeah. So I think I can't remember how many of those a year I sponsor, but it's quite a few. And then a lot of other events. But I think it's a great way to connect with other like-minded people and not like-minded people, like people mm-hmm. just to grow and kind of stretch yourselves a little bit.
Yeah, because sometimes it's easy and comfortable to be pushing yourself out in front of people like you or that already know you. Mm-hmm. But then to actually look at those other possible markets and types of people is a bit more of a challenge.
It is, but there's so much growth in that space, don't you think?
That's where the growth is.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, there's so much from a career perspective. Like I was having a conversation with somebody the other day about how, you know, like 30 or 40 years ago, you were looked down upon if you had multiple employers, right? If you changed jobs or employers a lot over your career, where now that's really the norm is to change jobs like every couple of years, like maybe 4 or 5 years, because you want to learn a different skill set or you want exposure to a different industry or a different role or whatever. It's a cultural shift, but I do see a lot of benefit with it because there's so much growth that happens in that space. I mean, anytime I've taken a new position, it's like a year of being a little bit exhausted mentally just because you're learning so much. And that's the exciting part. I was able to sort of meld those two trains of thought within State Farm because I've stayed with the same company, but I've had like so many different roles. I've really changed internally. I change roles like every 3 to 4 years. So I would learn a role and then say, okay, I've sort of mastered that. Can I do next? Yeah. You know, and then I'd apply for a different opening and I'd move to another department and I'd learn that. And then now that I'm, you know, independent and in this agency role, it's just the sky's the limit. It's it's how much I want to take on. There's always something to learn. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm really focused on learning. I've been reading a lot of books on sales leadership. Because I don't really have a sales background. And so how do I build and develop and manage a sales team? It's different than managing an operation.
Admins, yeah, definitely.
And I just recognize that
the personalities are very different.
It is, totally. And I'm so thankful. I was trying to remember who recommended this book to me, and I can't even give them the credit due. But somebody recommended a book to me, and it just really opened my eyes to, wow, I need to learn how to do this because I don't know. You know, this isn't getting in my skill set. It's actually, it's called Snails and Mirrors.
Okay.
So that's been real helpful.
Yeah. So I think I'm the third one by him now, but
okay,
all in that space. Mm-hmm. But just, you know, seeing all of a sudden 6 years in, like, oh, I have a skill gap here. Mm-hmm. So how am I going to fill it? Yeah, I don't have a manager telling me that I
did. But it's great that you're seeing that, right? Because I think so many business owners kind of feel like they know it all. Or feel like they should know it all. So it's,
I feel the opposite of
that. Yeah.
I feel like I
don't. Right, because how else are you going to grow?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've certainly learned a lot, and I've been blessed with success, but there's so much room for improvement. Mm-hmm. So I just keep working at it a little bit more every day.
Mm-hmm. In our previous conversations we've had at chamber events and things, you've mentioned too about how important the growth of your staff is. Mm-hmm. So how do you go about that?
So I think if number one, I have to lead by example. If I expect them to invest from a self-development standpoint, they have to see me doing
on a regular
basis, right? So I make sure that I'm always doing that, and that I will share podcasts that I'm listening to. I'll share books, articles, and then we have individual development plans that I'll work on with people, and even on a personal level. Like, it doesn't just have to be related to their role with my organization. It can be if they have something personal going on that they're really trying to grow in a space, we'll be talking about that too, because it all goes together.
Yeah. If they're happy, if they're growing, if they're thriving, that's all going to benefit it.
Your psychology and mental health really play into any job performance, right? So it only benefits me if I can help them on a personal level.
Mm-hmm.
I'll end up seeing results. It might be down the road. It might, you know, not be a direct relation, but it'll happen.
Mm-hmm. Besides like this book, are there any other sort of books, tools, people like that you found as role models or that helped you in your career along the way?
Gosh, I've had so many role models along the way. It would be difficult to even pinpoint them. I am constantly trying to learn from other people. So I have, I'm always investing in that space. I try to go to conferences within my own industry a couple times a year. And they're not, like, State Farm has a big conference like every 4 years. That's not what I mean. I mean, like a conference that's on professional development within the insurance industry or within entrepreneurship or some aspect of business. I try to do that a couple times a year. I have one that I go to twice a year, and then I try to find other ones and learn from other people in that respect. I've been working with Wendy Waldron to help me sort of build the structure as I combined these two agencies. And I'm trying to scale up. She's been amazing with offering her expertise in doing that. And that's another professional that, you know, again, you just have to come alongside and borrow and learn from.
Yeah, exactly. There are plenty of resources around here. It's just putting yourself out there, meeting them and talking to them.
This is such a rich community. It, when you really dig in, there are so many really, really talented, knowledgeable, and professional people here that you just have to find them and build relationships.
Yeah. Just put yourself
in. Mm-hmm.
Be open
to
listening to what other people have to say and offer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're doing this interview specifically now because it's the Entrepreneurial Women feature coming up in the paper. So are there challenges or advantages, or have you found that being an entrepreneurial woman that you faced or come across?
Well, I think the go-to is always going to be that life-work
balance with the family obligations, right? So that always brings with it a lot of challenges that I think men don't necessarily face to the same degree that women do. Because not to say that men aren't responsible for, you know, being a parent at home, but there's just a different level of responsibility for men than there is for most dads. And so I think that that's always, you know, a huge...
Because you want that.
I do.
That's the thing. It's like, I think that it's not like it's forced upon us.
No.
That's, you want
to. It's 100% my role.
To be, yeah.
It's, you know, that, and that's the role I want to have. So, but balancing that with not just a career, but a business, it is an extra layer. But I've actually found it to be so much more rewarding this way of being an entrepreneur and mother and wife together, because I have so much more flexibility. Like, you know, last year, my daughter was a senior in high school, and I made a very conscious decision that I was going to do less, right, with the business.
That's a critical time. And then she's getting ready to then leave the nest.
Yeah. So it was a critical time in her life and our life as a family. And there were going to be important decisions made. And I wanted to make sure that I was fully invested and engaged and had the time and energy to do that. And my husband and I also help some aging relatives. So we had to balance that as well. And so I made a conscious decision to reduce my goal in the agency for the last year, knowing that I just was going to have to balance a number of things. And that was a conscious decision. But now I'm approaching 2025. We've gotten through that, and now it changes. So that's the beautiful thing about owning your own business, is I can make those decisions. I don't have somebody telling me that what I have to do and what I don't have to do on a daily basis. I can take that time. So like last year, you know, my daughter was playing basketball. If she had a couple games, like I was going to be leaving early to go to her games, and I might be working later at night, or I might be working on the weekend or whatever, but I was going to be at her basketball games. So that was wonderful.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that aspect of it. The other thing that I've noticed as a woman in this environment is that I've been coached a lot by men to sell. And I think that they don't understand the gender differences and communication differences and cultural differences, that I don't think that women can really sell the same way that men can sell. So it's perceived different, and I've had to learn that on my own.
That's really interesting. That's a good point.
Yeah. So when I was being coached, like early in my agency, on how to approach and how to follow with prospects, I think that a man doing that would be perceived one way, and a woman doing the same thing could be perceived as maybe overly assertive. Yeah. So I've had to, you know,
you want to be authentic to yourself. For me, that's number one in business.
Absolutely. And truthfully, I embarked on this with very little sales experience. So that was an area where I was taking the coaching because I knew that I lived in that area. But then I had to step back and evaluate, like, does this actually work for me, and figure out my own way?
And you did.
Yeah.
That's great.
Thank you. So I'm still learning.
Yeah. We always are. We always are, and growing. So we discussed a little bit about how you're quite community minded and you're quite involved in different community initiatives. Is there anything there that you want to give a shout out to, or anything you're particularly proud of? Or
so I am super proud of the Chamber's Women's Business Council, because I was, I believe, like yourself, a founding member when it first started, right?
I actually wasn't.
Oh, you weren't?
No, I just joined 2 years ago.
Oh.
Yeah, because I was so involved in Lake George.
Okay. I see. So, wow, only 2 years.
Yeah.
So
I make my
quickly.
Yeah,
certainly. So I believe I started that right at the beginning, which I want to say was maybe like the fall of 2019 is maybe.
Right. It's probably shortly after you opened.
Yeah. It was within the first year. Sherry Finkel Murphy had contacted me and I said, okay, I'm on board. That has been a really wonderful group. I love the community that's there because it is, there's a lot of groups that are very referral driven and they have to produce referrals, have to have certain number of assigned meetups and things like that. To me, that was too much. And I was more looking for just a group of women that I could just collaborate with and learn from. Mm-hmm. And I think that group has been amazing.
Yeah.
It's really more focused on professional and personal development and just community of professional women versus having to feel obligated for those referrals come organically.
Yeah,
for sure.
Because you build the relationships with people.
Yeah, but I think the organic nature to me was so much more important. And later this month on October 30th, I'm actually going to be starting. Tisha Mahali and I have headed up the Christian Business Women's Connection. And so we're going to be hosting quarterly breakfast events.
I know there's a men's one.
There is.
It's good to see you're starting one for
women. Yeah. So I was a little jealous that the men had that. And I had been hearing great things about it for years. So Albany, they started one in Albany. Tisha and I both attended it and both were sort of like simultaneously like, hey, we should have this in Glens Falls. Let's do it. So we've been working on it for a couple of months and October 30th. Queensbury, I think it's at 7 a.m.
7 a.m.?
I'm not a morning person.
Mm-hmm. So once a month is it? Oh, no, you said four times a year.
Yeah, once a quarter.
So not.
Mm-hmm. That's so terrible. So great speakers and great community. We're looking forward to that.
Oh, that's great. Good. Best of luck with that.
Thank you.
Is there anything else you want to include in?
I would just encourage any women who are thinking to step outside their roles as mothers, employees, wives, and go into the entrepreneurial space to just dig in because I don't think that you're going to regret it.
Mm-hmm. And you can find the resources that you need in the community.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining me in this episode of Building Success Stories. Are you ready to take your business to the next level? I've got you covered. Visit my website, AnnDonnellySuccessStories.com, to access additional resources and sign up for my newsletter. And to work with me directly, visit AnnDonnelly.com to learn more about my services as a fractional COO and business consultant. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform and never miss an episode. Until next time, keep building your success story.